"Oh, I don't think that'll be necessary," she says in what I can only describe as a gloating tone of voice. "After missing the meeting, you and your precious counter-possession unit will be divisional history, and you'll have only yourselves to blame. Goodbye." And the bitch hangs up on me. I look round and see both Andy and Angleton staring at me. "She hung up," I say stupidly. "Fucking Harriet has a diversion on Boris's line. It's a setup. Something about making an end run around the CPU."
"Then we shall have to attend this meeting in person," Angleton says, briskly marching toward the front doors, which bend aside to get out of his way. "Follow me."
We proceed directly to the helicopter, which has kept its engines idling while we've been inside. It's only taken, what, 3 or 4 minutes since Angleton arrived? I see another figure heading toward us across the car park, a figure in a grey trouser suit, slightly stained, a wild look in her eyes.
"Hey, you," she shouts. "I want some answers."
Angleton turns to me.
"Yours?"
I nod. He beckons to her imperiously.
"Come with us,"
he calls, raising his voice over the whine of gathering turbines. Past her shoulder, I see one of the fake firemen lowering a kit bag that had been, purely coincidentally, pointed at D.I. Sullivan's back.
"This bit I always dislike," he adds in a low monotone, his face set in a grim expression of disapproval. "The fewer lives we warp, the better."
I half consider asking him to explain what he means, but he's already climbing into the rear compartment of the chopper, and Andy is following him. I give Josephine a hand up as the blades overhead begin to turn, and the engines rise in a full-throated, bellowing duet. I get my headset on in time to hear Angleton's orders.
"Back to London, and don't spare the horses."
The laundry is infamous for its grotesque excesses in the name of accounting. Budgetary infractions are punished like war crimes, and mere paperclips can bring down the wrath of dead alien gods on your head. But when Angleton says, "Don't spare the horses," he sends us screaming across the countryside at 140 miles per hour, burning aviation fuel by the ton, and getting ATC to clear lower priority traffic out of our way. And all because he doesn't want to be late for a meeting. There's a police car waiting for us at the pad, and we cut through the chaotic London traffic incredibly fast, almost making it into third gear at times. "McLuhan's got scorpion stare," I tell Angleton, round the curve of Andy's shoulder. "And headquarters' security cams are all wired. If he primes them before we get back there, we could find a lockout. Or worse, it all depends on what Harriet and her boss have been planning."
"We will just have to see."
Angleton nods very slightly, his facial expression rigid.
"Do you still have your lucky charm?"
"Had to use it." I'd shrug if there was more room. "What do you think Bridget's up to?"
"I couldn't possibly comment."
I take Angleton's dismissal as a put-down, but he points his chin at the man in the driver's seat.
"When we get there, Bob, I want you to go in through the warehouse door and wake the caretaker. You have your mobile telephone?"
Yeah, I say, hoping like hell that the battery hasn't run down.
"Good. Andrew, you and I will enter through the front door. Bob, set your telephone to vibrate. When you receive a message from me, you will know it is time to have the janitor switch off the main electrical power. And the backup power."
"Oops." I lick my suddenly dry lips, thinking of all the electrical containment pentacles in the basement, and all the computers plugged into the filtered and secured circuit on the other floors. All hell's going to break loose if I do that.
"That's what I'm counting on."
The bastard smiles, and despite all the horrible sights I've seen today so far, I hope most of all that I never see it again before the day I die.
"Hey! What about me?"
Angleton glances at the front seat with a momentary flash of irritation. Josephine stares right back, clearly angry and struggling to control it.
"I'm your liaison officer for North Buckinghamshire," she says, "and I'd really like to know who I'm liaising with, especially as you seem to have left a few bodies on my manor that I'm going to have to bury, and this jerk..."
She means me. I'm distraught.
"Oh, the ignominy. Promised me you'd have the answers."
Angleton composes himself.
"There are no answers, madam, only further questions," he says,
and just for a second he sounds like a pious wanker of a vicar going through the motions of comforting the bereaved.
"And if you want the answers, you'll have to go through the jerk's filing cabinet."
Bastard. Then there's a flashing sardonic grin, dry as the desert sands in June.
Do you want to help prevent any, recurrence of what you saw an hour ago? If so, you may accompany the jerk and attempt to keep him from dying.
He reaches out a hand and drops a ragged slip of paper over her shoulder.
You'll need this.
Provisional warrant card. My, oh my. Josephine mutters something unkind about his ancestry, barnyard animals, and lengths of rubber hose. I pretend not to hear because we're about 3 minutes out, stuck behind a slow-moving but gregarious herd of red double-decker buses, and I'm trying to remember the way to the janitor's office in the laundry main unit basement and whether there's anything I'm likely to trip over in the dark.
"Excuse me for asking, but how many corpses do you usually run into in the course of your job?" I ask.
"Too many, since you showed up."
We turn the street corner into a brick-walled alley, crowded by wheelie bins and smelling of vagrant piss.
"But since you ask, I'm a detective inspector. You get to see lots of vile stuff on the beat."
Something in her expression tells me I'm on dangerous ground here, but I persist.
"Well, this is the laundry. It's our job to deal with seven shades of vile shit so that people like you don't have to."
I take a deep breath.
"And before we go in, I figured I should warn you that you're going to think Fred and Rosemary West work for us, and Harold Shipman's the medical officer."
At this point, she goes slightly pale. The demon DIYers and Dr. Death are the acme of British serial killerdom after all, but she doesn't flinch.
"And you're the good guys?"
"Sometimes I have my doubts," I sigh.
"Well, join the club."
I have a feeling she's going to make it, if she lives through the next hour.
"Enough bullshit. This is the street-level entrance to the facilities block under Headquarters Building 1. You saw what those fuckers did with the cameras at the car pound and Site Able. If my guess is straight, they're going to do it all over again here, or worse. From here, there's a secure line to several of the Met's offices, including various borough-level control systems, such as the Camden Town Control Center. Scorpion Stair isn't ready for nationwide deployment.
What the hell would justify that?"
she demands, eyes wide.
"You do not have clearance for that information."
Amazing how easily the phrase trips off the tongue.
"Besides, it'd give you nightmares. But you're the one who mentioned hell, and, as I was saying..."
I stop with an overflowing dumpster between us and the anonymous doorway. Our pet lunatic, who killed all those folks at Dillinger Associates, and who is now in a committee...